Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Mentioning the name Sea Legs Brewing outside of the Sunshine State might draw a few blank looks from beer lovers. It certainly snuck up on me, and I'd like to think that I have my finger on the beer pulse in this country. I was flicking through the gram and came across one of their posts somehow. One click through to their profile and a few photos later, and I was like, who are these people? I want to know more. I want to meet them. So here we are. We're about to go on a journey, a voyage if you will, and we'll see where this little brewery Sea Legs came from, and more importantly, where their head brewer and co-founder John Fuchs sees them going in the future. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, John Fuchs.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
Mate, it's great. Thank you for joining me this evening. You've put the young 2-year-old to bed, and now we can share a beer together and have a bit of a chat about Sea Legs Brewing. I'm just going to – there we go. Oh, geez, that went bloody. Oh, shit, hold on. Oh, it started to come out of the top. Oh, this is I'm drinking your Breakaway IPA, West Coast IPA.
Oh, nice. 7.5%.
I haven't put it into a glass. I've just cracked the can, but I can smell those sort of beautiful West Coast around the piney resin. You know, that sort of – oh, that is a nice beer.
Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely. Yeah, it's meant to be a piney, resiny, fairly dank West Coast IPA.
Yep. I'm liking that, mate. I'm liking that. 7.5% beer on a school night.
Yeah.
Don't tell my wife.
Yeah. It's a sneaky one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Mate, I'd like to think I'm pretty clever, and I think that you don't actually have an Aussie accent, do you? So can we spend a minute talking about life before you came to Australia?
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm from the States. I'm from Colorado.
I'm smart like that.
Yeah. Easy to catch on.
But
from Colorado. I moved here in 2013. And yeah, I moved here as a previous to this, I was a chemical engineer. I did that for about 12 years. And the whole time doing that, I was a pretty heavy home brewer all the way back to when I was in uni. And I'm from around various parts around the Denver area. But it's a bit of a craft beer mecca there. So yeah, I was big into it, and it's a big scene there, and it's something I did for a long time. I had a few mates who had opened breweries and things like that. And it was always something that was probably just not really on my radar to do, open a brewery, but it was, you know, it's like a pipe dream thing. Like, man, that'd be cool.
Do you remember sort of back to when you first started drinking craft beer and thought, oh, I reckon I want to do a bit with this?
I actually remember specifically there was a brewery in the city I went to uni in Golden, Colorado, which is, if you know Coors, which you likely would, that's where they're out of and based and started and headquartered and all those types of things. But there was a really tiny brewery there when I was in uni. It was called Golden City Brewery, and it was literally in the back of a guy's house, and he just turned his back. He turned his backyard into a little beer garden, and he basically, like, he'd go in there and he did great deals for the uni students and things like that. But you'd go in there and you'd just have a beer and you look around and be like, man, like, seriously, this is like, this dude is living the dream. This is his house. He has a fairly small brewery, and it takes up a portion of his house, and he uses his backyard as a beer garden. And it was just pretty amazing. And it, you know, you'd have a pretty good chat to him. And he was originally the guy who put me on to home brewing originally, you know? And so, yeah, I think back to that, and that was like 16 years ago now. Like, that would be probably the instance that I was like, yeah. And being here, like, I honestly, when we decided to start Sea Legs, that's that's kind of what I thought back to, which is funny. So,
oh, cool. Did you go straight to All Grain Brewing from those early days?
No, I did a bit of extract brewing, and you know, there's a bit of learning there, and did that for a bit, and not for a huge amount of time. It was pretty quick to just being like, you know, like even, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's being an engineer or something, but the word extract like pained me a little bit. I don't know why. I don't think it's a painful thing. I think it's something every brewer, whether, no matter what stage you're at, it's something you should do and learn about and experiment with and try. But there was something about just the word extract that I was like, well, yeah. What is that? Where does that come from? Blah, 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 you know? So
doesn't sound overly natural. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So
sometimes extract brewing is really frowned upon in the homebrew scene, isn't it? But you got to start somewhere.
You do. Yeah. And I think it's a good way to, kind of put a foundation for the process and how, you know, the bigger picture of the process works. And, you know, it really, really kind of starts to mold you as, you know, as things are, in the bigger picture of things. I mean, when you dive into All Grain, it's crazy. So, there's so many different variables as soon as you do that. So,
Yeah, I actually wish I'd spent more time working with extracts rather than going to All Grain. I would have just saved myself a lot of pain of just like failed brews where I just didn't know quite enough. I knew enough to be dangerous, but not enough to make great beer.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of doing that. And I mean, I'd probably debate my own point of doing extract brewing is, I mean, there's really no better way to learn a lesson than learning it the hard way. that's kind of how, it's not how I live my life, but it's how I learn a lot of lessons. So especially in brewing. So
when your son comes home at age 16 and might have put a ding in the car, are you going to be like, yeah, look, it's okay, mate. You've learned the lesson the hard way. You'll all be okay.
I'll be thinking that, but I likely won't be saying that.
It'd be, God damn you.
Yeah, I probably won't be thinking that either. So when the dust settles, I'll say that.
Fair enough. What is it about brewing that you absolutely love and wanted to make a career change because of it?
It's more or less the process. I love everything about the process. I love how much you can make it your own. So, the fundamentals behind beer, making beer, are the same, but there's rarely one process from one brewery to the next that is the same. And it's whatever it might be. Like you could be, I don't know. You can manipulate the process to do what you need to do with the beer you have. And so for me, it always started with the process. So if I have a beer and it's in, say I brew a beer and I, for some reason, need to put it in a bright tank instead of a fermenter. And then I need to manipulate our equipment to put it into something else to, say, dry hop it and do whatever it might be. There's something about the manipulation of the whole process and making it yours and making it specifically what you want it to be that I really liked. And I think it started with that, and then it turned into being able to manipulate the ingredients and the way you go about the process and the way you make it yours as well to make something a bit more unique in a beer. So, it started as, you know, like a manual, like literally like a process, like if you had a flow chart of things, and something that started with that and evolved into something that was more, final product driven. And I mean, it's all this kind of big circle of how you manipulate things to make it what you'd like, all within the realm of making a good beer or a great beer and a unique beer that people love and it's really high quality, and trying to maintain that quality standard.
Hope you're enjoying the episode. First up, this one's for the Facebook followers. Thanks so much for being part of this whole beer healer ride. I bloody love all the conversations that we have and the way that we can all share this craft beer gospel together. It is absolutely awesome. Now, if you're also one of the people that listens via Facebook as opposed to using Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I'm just wondering whether you might be able to help me a little bit more with spreading this craft beer gospel. All you got to do is like the post as you're listening to it. And then if you really want to go that step further, maybe share it with your mates as well. That would be awesome. But even better, join up to Apple Podcasts, like, subscribe, rate, review, all that shit. It'll just be awesome. I'd love your help. Thanks very much. So a young bloke growing up in a fantastic beer region, what were your influences? Breweries, brewers, beers? What sort of formed you as a brewer?
Mostly my mistakes.
I like that.
You know, there's so many, like in Denver in particular, there's just, and maybe I'm biased, but there's so many amazing breweries there. And I'm you'll notice by our beers, they're big hoppy beers for the most part. We do a fair bit that's not like that, but typically everything's a bit of a bigger beer. It's a bit of a hoppier beer, a bit of a more bitter beer, slightly more West Coast style of a beer. We don't do much in the way of hazies. We do them, but it's not as much in what we do. But a lot of that's all influenced probably from where I'm from. And a lot of that's, maybe it's just because that's where I'm from and that's a preference and all those types of things. But I think there's a lot of breweries in Colorado that are doing amazing things with those types of beers. And I think to beers like, I remember doing a tour of Oscar Blues and in Longmont when, I mean, I think this was like 2009 or something. And they're a massive brewery now. They're fairly big then, but there's breweries like that. There's another a brewery that came on a bit later called Denver Beer Company. I think for their first like 200 beers, they didn't brew the same beer twice. And so they're kind of totally different ends of the spectrum, but I think, yeah, things like that, you know, you compare that to what you're doing, or you use, you know, anything they're doing to inspire you to do something different. And then, yeah, typically I'd fuck it up. And yeah, that's where I'd learn something and, yeah, kind of evolve our beers into what they are. And so, I think there's some influence there and some of the unique stuff we do. And there's certainly the influence there and majority of our beers is they're a bit more hop driven than hop forward.
Hey, you mentioned obviously from Colorado, you mentioned Oscar Blues. Straight pinging into my mind is the name Scott Overdorf from Hobart Brewing Company. Have you ever crossed paths with Scotty?
I haven't. I know who you're talking about, but
yeah,
I haven't.
Great brewer. That would be a great collaboration one day between you two if you're ever allowed to travel to each other's states.
I like what you're saying. Gosh.
I'm so just the beer healer, bringing good brewers together for
yeah,
the last
that's a good
5
idea.
Years.
I
know a guy, I can make it happen, I reckon.
Yeah,
so there we go.
I'd say we invite you up for that.
Nice. Let's do it. Hey, so you said you came to Australia in 2013. Had you already been brewing professionally before you came, or was this the start of your pro brewing?
No. So I moved here as a chemical engineer. So it was a bit it was a career move. I was doing a lot of work as an engineer and I'd kind of gotten to the point that I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was keen to travel and things like that. And, an opportunity came up to come to Australia and I was all for it. And, I came here. Green Beacon and Newstead had both just recently opened. And as soon as I got here, I remember thinking like, man, this would be a great place to start a brewery. Like you could feel that it was the kind of city for it and that it would be something that would thrive here. But it wasn't really anywhere on my radar. I moved here with 3 bags and I'd certainly had no intention of staying, but I'd moved here and about a year after moving here I met my now wife, and thing that changed a fair bit of what I was doing in general. And yeah, I wound up moving on from my previous career. I met in my previous career two Canadian guys. They had both been living here, I don't know, 10 years or so. And after I met my now wife, I hadn't brewed for maybe a year and a half, 2 years, because I didn't have any in my kit. I was, you know, kind of living out of a suitcase for a while. And we moved in, we got a house, and I'm like, I really want to brew. It's, you know, I'd like to brew. I'm keen to brew. And so I went to Bunnings and I bought a Nesky. I bought a big like turkey fryer, 50 liter, kettle, basically a big burner, and just kind of manufactured some kit and started brewing some beer again. And, nice. Yeah, I had them over for, I think it was like a Super Bowl.
Are you a Broncos fan?
Huge Broncos fan. Yeah. Yep.
I'm Steelers.
Oh, yep. Well, that's that.
Okay. Let's move on. Anyway.
So they had come over for Super Bowl party. Or not a party. It was like 9 a.m. So, or 10 a.m. Yeah,
not a.m. beers. That's not a, not a party.
I had taken the day off to watch the Super Bowl. And I had a brew on, and they had never been over, and they'd never sampled what I had brewed previous. And so we had a few of the beers that I had sampled in my previous batch, and they were like, oh my God, you know? And so we started having a chat about it, and they were just witnessing the process as they were sampling a beer, and they were kind of hooked on it. Anyways,
you had that old plan, didn't you?
Well, I didn't, but you would think I would have, because it just is. We just, all the three of us were like, yep, we're doing this, you know? And so, so we spent, so that was, yeah, I'd probably been here 2 years at that point, but, yeah, so we started planning a fair bit, looking at costs and, you know, what it would take to actually open a brewery. And, then, you know, we kind of explored that, and it seemed like a real possibility for us. And so we started looking for a location, and we spent a long time looking for a location. We never really found anything that just quite caught our eye or any of that. And along the way, we met another guy, an Aussie guy. His name's Tim, that was also keen to open a brewery. He had some money to invest, and he was keen. So, we right around when we met him, we found a place in Kangaroo Point that was much bigger than what we intended, especially from a venue standpoint. So we have a pretty significantly sized venue to go along with the brewery.
Yeah, it's like it's a battle of you and felons over the river there, aren't you? You can virtually throw beer cans at each other.
Seems like it. Yeah, seems like it. If you had a potato gun, you could shoot one across for sure. So we always intended to have a smaller cellar door with a more dominant brewery kind of thing, but it wound up kind of evolving into this more kind of hybrid venue,
brewery type of thing.
And we found that. It probably took us from when we started chatting seriously about opening a brewery, it probably took us 2 years to find that spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We looked for ages and ages and ages, and maybe we were picky, but we never found anything that's, you know, when you're making an investment in something like that, you want it to be right.
You want it to be right, don't you?
When we found the place in Kangaroo Point, we all looked at each other like, holy shit, you know? Great space, huge space.
On the river.
Yeah. Great location. Absolutely. Like, we think about it now, and we probably couldn't have been luckier, because the locals are amazing. We have an absolutely great community there, and yeah, they're massive supporters of ours. But
And for those that don't know Brisbane, you've got the river running all the way through the city, and there's these great ferries that hop from one side of the river to the other. And you guys are pretty much the first stop up the river after Eagle Point, if I'm correct.
Yeah, just after Eagle Street. Yeah. So
Eagle Street. Yeah, yeah. I remember jumping on there one day, taking my wife for a bit of a treat out to Tenerife to just go, oh, shit, there's a brewery here. All right.
Yeah.
So
Yep, absolutely. I
had a great day out there at Green Beacon, but you guys are, you know, a great spot just on the other side of the river there. I love Brisbane. It's a great place. Mm. Now, so you took 2 years to get the site, mm-hmm. and then literally 6 months later you were up brewing beer out of your own – I'm joking. I know there was a bit of a drama. Tell us about it.
It was definitely not 6 months. No. Yeah, so it was about 2 years later. And then you dive into development applications and all those types of things. And the problem with where we were at is it's a very residential area. And where we were opening was originally zoned high density residential, which meant we had to change it to an industrial type use, which exposed us to a lot of stuff and a lot of costs. And it also exposed us to the local community.
People that didn't want to change too much?
Yeah. So there wasn't heaps of pushback, but there was one guy in particular who gave us a lot of pushback and probably cost us about 9 months. We were given a approval by city council, and then
appeal or something, didn't you?
Yeah, he appealed, yeah. And then we wound up more or less in court for about 9 months. Shit. And yeah, we
got okay. So stop there for 1 second. Yep. If you could give any piece of advice to anybody starting their own thing and they are faced with an appeal process, what piece of advice would you give them?
That is a very good question.
Call the Ukrainian mafia. Yeah,
I would say, I don't want to give bad advice. But I would.
there's a caveat. Like it's like, you know, this is not real advice. There's a disclaimer here.
Yep. I would say, don't cave to a realistic level. So
yep.
We always knew that. So the big thing was we were always made out to be like this nightclubby type thing that people are going to be stumbling out of drunkenly at 2 a.m. And, you know, there's people were worried about crime happening in the park and things like that. And we sat down with a guy and we're like, man, I don't know if you know the industry or what a craft beer, like a craft brewery is even like. And, you know, we went through all these things and it always came back to all this, that, and the other thing. And he had some money and we didn't have a lot of money, but we had already invested enough money that we were gonna.
You weren't gonna go down quietly.
No, we weren't. Nah, and, fair enough. And he basically.
And you believed in what you were doing too, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We did. Yeah. And we knew that we weren't a nuisance. We weren't, you know, some kind of party thing coming through. And and we also knew that we had the support of city council. So they had given us approval. They've had aspirations to kind of bring that Main Street area where we're on up into a bit of a different level as opposed to the residential thing that it is now. And so we kind of hung tight, and you know, we fully intended to see it through because A, we had a lot of money into it, and B, he didn't really have that much to stand on. Like, we weren't a big distraction. We had done a lot of surveys, engineering surveys for parking, for emissions, for environmental, for noise, all these different things. And I mean, there wasn't much else that he could really stand on aside from that he was allowed to voice his opinion because we were going through this big change. And so
yeah.
We basically took it to the point that it was going to wind up going to trial probably,
yep.
Which would have cost both of us significant money. And it just kind of was at that point that we just came to an agreement, which kind of makes sense. So,
yeah. So has he ever been in for a beer?
I've never seen him in for a beer. I've seen him in the streets and I know him.
Yep.
I've met him in person and he doesn't say hi. So,
okay.
Yeah, which is fair unfortunate enough. Because it's, you know, like I met him in person and, Yeah, we had a lovely conversation and he seemed different than he was behind closed doors. And you're just like, oh man, that's a bummer because we're neighbors now.
Yeah. So you're up and running. How would you describe the vibe of the place that you created?
It's pretty good. It's very industrial. We're still kind of evolving as a venue and things like that. It's definitely a working brewery, I'd tell you that. We try to tidy a lot of things up by the time we open, and we're open 7 days from noon. So that makes it really hard because we're pretty busy. Monday through Friday, there's definitely a fair bit going on in the brewery, and we try not to distract what's going on in the venue, but half of the place is a venue. So occasionally we're pulling pallets through or spent grain through or.
But the punters would love that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it's
a charm.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had a complaint about that type of stuff. So most, you know, when someone sees spent grain being pulled through the venue, they're typically like, oh, can I taste that? Or, you know.
Oh,
or,
yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah.
Or if we're still canning when, you know, the venue opens, everyone's. Like that's a cool process to watch. So people are looking over and peeking over and
yeah. So there's nothing better than grabbing a fresh can off the line and cracking it too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Yep. Hey, so you know, craft beer lovers in the Sunshine State right now are pretty much spoiled for choice these days. And I think it's lucky that you do have your own brew pub because, you know, competition for taps is pretty hot up there from what I've seen in my travels around. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, do you believe that breweries of your size need to have that tap room to survive in the current market?
I think it helps. I think it's a smart move, because the wholesale market it's tight, and anyone who's opening a brewery our size in general is probably on a fairly tight budget. So the beauty of having a tap room is that's no matter which way you cut it, that's your highest margin sale. And if you can have a tap room, whether it's small, whether it's medium, whether it's large, whatever, it really help subsidize if you want to start doing a wholesale type thing. It's for us, it's been great. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, but I don't know if we'd be at the same place we are today without having the tap room we have. We always intended to have a tap room, but, if you can find a way and if you intend to go wholesale, if you can find a way to help subsidize that and help carry some of that, especially the initial kind of diving into all that, I'd say it's a smart move to make because, you know, if you have something to subsidize that, if you do find a space in the wholesale market, wherever it is, and you can make both ends profitable, you're probably on that smaller scale, you're probably never going to make beer more expensively than you ever will at that specific point. Yeah. So depending where you go from there, things can only get better. So,
yeah. So we're talking about a brewery of your size. What kind of kit do you have in there?
We have a 3-vessel, 15 hectoliter kit. It's a mash tun, lauter tun, kettle whirlpool in one. The mash tun can double as a kettle, just for stacking batches. And then, it's from Tiantai out of China. And then we've got 6 fermenters, 4 bright tanks and, that's where we're at. A couple of those fermenters are doubles. And we're about to order a couple more fermenters and another bigger bright tank. And
so you wouldn't call you small, you're middle.
maybe middle of the road. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how we go. We're limited with space where we're at, so we'll maximize the space we have now. In terms of tank space and production numbers and things like that. And then we'll probably debate where we go from there, but we'll certainly maximize where we're at. We're at max capacity as it is now, which is a good problem to have.
Yeah. It's something we didn't mention earlier in the discussion was that this whole thing for you, whether it be as a matter of you had to or by choice, but it actually started off as contract brewing, didn't you?
Yeah, it did. It did originally, and this was just due to some hiccups in our original build and with a dodgy builder we had. But yeah, we brewed our first batches at Slipstream.
Yep.
Which was good. And, yeah, there's, I can't say enough about those guys, but, Ian's an excellent brewer and Dale's a great guy. And yeah, we did our first, gosh, maybe 5 batches of beer there. So what we originally had on tap when we opened the venue was all brewed out of Slipstream. Yeah. So
it was kind of lucky. And then sort of as you started off with you know, getting the taps filled. You didn't actually have enough to fill all your taps, did you? So you went and sourced beers from other local brewers. And I'm just wondering, did that sort of work double for you? So you obviously got to fill your own taps. And then you created some great relationships that maybe helped build your brand potentially via their venues as well, did you?
Yeah, so we had, you know, just kind of when you're building a brewery, you meet other brewers and you go through all these different hectic, weird things. And yeah, we met a fair few people. And most specifically, it was Soapbox just across the river from us. It was Archer Brewing, and it was Slipstream who we just kind of built various relationships with and helping each other out. And it was hard not to support them by, you know, just putting their beer on tap, and we still try to do that to this day where we can. Cool. We have 12 taps, so there's a fair few to fill there. We fill what we can with our own, but always keen to keep a guest tap on. But yeah, early days we had something from all three of those breweries on. And I think I'm missing one. But those were the three big ones. We spent a lot of time liaising with Soapbox, and we were both kind of, it was like we had dueling brewery builds. but we were able to share various things with each other, and it was they helped us out a lot then, and they still help us out to this day. And the Archer guys have always been great. The Slipstream guys really looked after us back then. And so, yeah, you know, you just, it was good to see, because you're entering an industry you've never been in. You're new to the industry and you just kind of accepted to it. And it's not like some kind of cutthroat, competitive thing. Everyone's kind of looking out for each other. And it was really cool to see early on. And, you know, the first thing you want to do is help support them as well after they've been supporting you.
So the vibe around, you know, your area, there's lots of beers out, you know, the Fortitude Valley, you got Tenerife, and you got in the city and all that sort of thing. Like, there's plenty of breweries around you. Is it, it's not so much a competitive thing, it's more like a helping each other thing to maybe defeat the big evil empire of Forex Gold and Great Northern, perhaps?
Yeah, it's definitely a community thing. It's a collaborative thing. Like, we did a brew about a month and a half ago. I don't know if you heard about it. It was something organized by Archer called the BNE IPA. But we did it as a collaboration. And we, of 22 of the 24 local independent breweries, we're all involved. Wow. And we each, we brewed it at our place. And everyone came and got amongst it. And it was cool. Yeah, it was a really, really good experience. And it, like, just being a part of that, and it's right, you know, in the middle of coronavirus and all those types of things, and everyone's keen to get amongst it and do a charity. It was a beer that went to charity.
Yep.
And yeah, it was like, it's just kind of, it goes to show what the local industry is. And yep, I mean, everyone's collaborative, everyone's friendly. It's not some kind of crazy competitive thing. And yeah, it's a cool industry to be part of, I'll tell you that.
Got a question for you. Do you like the show? And do you want to help support the industry that we all love by spreading the craft beer gospel far and wide? Well, there is one thing you can do, and it doesn't involve putting your hand in your pocket and pulling out your credit card. Nope, just click the Apple Podcast link in the show notes and leave a review and a rating. The Apple Podcast gods do the rest, and you will feel all warm and fuzzy for doing your bit for craft beer. That's all. Back to the interview.
Let's talk about your beers now. So I'm still, I've finished my breakaway IPA. That was dangerously drinkable for a 7.5%. I've got to tell you.
Nice.
And I had the tropical lager. I don't want to sound like a wanker, but I had the tropical lager in the hot tub with the wife the other night.
Oh, nice.
And that was great. And she actually finished the can, which she's not a beer drinker, and she really liked it. So what else you got in the range that we want to talk about?
Yeah, so it's the tropical lager and our pale ale are kind of our two biggest sellers.
Yep.
The tropical lagers kind of our attempt at a hoppy spin on a Queensland type lager.
Yep.
You know, something that's hoppy, but something that's easy drinking. Our pale ale's it's a very American style pale ale. It's fairly big. It's 5.6%.
Good size.
It's pretty heavily hopped with Chinook, Citra, Simcoe, and Columbus.
Nice.
And then, Columbus, Centennial.
Centennial. Still nice. Still good.
And then the rest of our core range, we have I wouldn't say an English style golden ale, but it's kind of our easiest drinking, least offensive beer. Yep. It's 4%. Yep. It's a Zacca and Amarillo. More or less everything we brew is dry hopped at least once. And it's very, very well rounded. It's probably my favorite beer in the range, our golden ale.
I love a golden ale. A lot of people, you know, think it's a style from years gone by that is no longer relevant, but I love them.
Yeah,
I really do. It's nice and easy drinking.
Yeah, and it's been one that's been really well received for us. So, and it's, you could almost call it our mid strength, and we're probably gonna drop it down and make it a mid strength.
I was gonna ask you that thing because I was looking through your range, and I'm thinking, you know, Forex Gold Country, really, you've got to have a mid-strength. And you didn't have one. I was running, like, you know, the Golden Ale at 4, I think the lager was 4.2 or thereabouts. And I was thinking, why haven't they got one? But that would make sense. A mid-strength Golden Ale, that'd be bloody good, I reckon.
Yeah, that's in the works to bring that back to 3.5 probably. And but it's one of our better sellers. And yeah, for me, it's probably my favorite beer in the range. Maybe it's because it keeps me the most sober, but
I think maybe because of the cheapest of mics.
No, I think in terms of the beer in general, it's the one I'm happiest with in terms of what it's intended to be and how it's turned out. It's a super clean beer, well-rounded, not overly offensive to probably anyone who drinks beer, whether they're a craft beer lover or a 4X gold lover, you know? So, what else? Yeah, we have our breakaway IPA, which is, it's really hard for us to not brew really big beers and really big hoppy beers. And I think it's stayed in our core range, and it's a big IPA. It's not a 6%er, it's not a 6.2 or a 6.5%er. It's a 7.5%er, and it's probably a microcosm of me as a beer drinker and what I absolutely love, which is just a big, big West Coast style IPA. That's, you know, it's hoppy, it's bitter, it's piney, resiny, dank. I'd say that's probably a summary of just me as a whole.
I've got a question for you. Who's the hip hop fan at your brewery that named your recent black IPA the Onyx Slam?
It was a bit of a collaborative one, but so myself, I'm a big kind of hip hop head.
I picked that up straight away.
Especially, you know, 90s, early 2000s.
90s hip hop. Yeah. Oh, I love it. And right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. And then our guy who runs the cellar, Mark, he's similar age to me. He has the exact same thing. And we listen to a fair bit of it, but we have our assistant brewer, her name's Abby. She is pretty young. I think she's 22. So she's not quite in tune to it. But so the Pink Boots beer was something we were like, yep, that's all you. You design it. What do you want to do? Blah, 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 blah. And we just randomly, she was wanting to, she was really keen to do something like in your face, you know? And I don't even know how that Onyx Slam song came to mind, but we just put it Slam. On and she's like, yeah. and it's like, let the boys be boys. And like, yeah. We played it for her and she's like, oh my God, that's so good. Let's do it. And, but let the girls be girls and yeah. all those types of things. And so,
yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So she's, yeah, she's slowly becoming a late '90s, early 2000s hip hop head. Nice. So,
yeah, I'm getting the feel. I was reading the beer label tonight, which is give a shout out to Rowling's Labels. I was talking to Brad this week on Instagram. He mentioned that when I said I was speaking to you that they do your labels, and I just noticed on the side of the label here, there's a start of a little story about a close call for a ship, and then when I went on to Untappd, I sort of saw a bit more about it. Is that something you want to do with your beers? Put a bit of a story behind the name?
A little bit, yeah. It kind of depends on the beer, and we do a bit of it by the seat of our pants, to be honest. But you know, a few of our core range beers are all a bit locally inspired. And then, yep. Yeah, we kind of anything we've done limited since then, where there's been pretty random kind of stories to the name, but there's absolutely a story to the name. So, you know, we'll sit there, like I just told you, we'll sit there and, you know, I don't even remember what it was with the Onyx, but we were just chatting hip hop, and for some reason I thought we were chatting about, you know, Slam and that song, and we put it on, and then it just kind of came to mind, you know. And the biggest thing behind the story of A, the beers we brew, and B, what we name them or what we kind of make the story of about them be is it's a pretty collaborative effort. And it's mostly kind of between me and the brew team and our primary sales rep. And we all just kind of sit there and probably across, you know, it might be a couple hours or a couple weeks, we'll chat about something. And it just evolves into something that's probably not what you originally thought it was going to be. And yeah,
that's cool though. Yeah. On a really important topic, who's your favorite 90s hip hop artist?
Ooh, man, that's tough.
It is tough. Like, what do you got? Like Naughty by Nature, the Notorious B.I.G., Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, A Tribe Called Quest, Wu-Tang, Cypress Hill, Old Dirty Bastard, yeah. DMX, Method Man, Eminem, Tupac. I didn't even know. Outkast. God, there's so many options.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I've always, since I was pretty young, been a huge Biggie fan. Wu-Tang is a very... If there's nothing to put on in the brewery, it's always like Wu-Tang is on.
Nice.
And then, man, probably A Tribe Called Quest.
Can I kick it?
Yeah. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
No, I actually just recently bought A Tribe Called Quest CD for my wife so she can listen in her car, and she's like, what is this? I'm not used to this. Oh. She's a bit younger than me, and so she's just, I'm like, just let it go. You'll get it. You'll get it.
I remember playing Can I Kick It? So my son's now about to turn 16. So, you know, when he was young and forming, and I would never ever play, you know, the Wiggles or any of the kiddie music in my car. My car's my car and I'll play my music. And so when he was probably, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 and A Tribe Called Quest would come on and would say, can I kick it? He'd be in the back in his little car. So he'd say, yes, you can.
That's
and
I was so like, good.
Oh, yeah. So awesome.
You're like, proud moment.
Yeah, I was pretty proud. Brainwashing him into 90s hip hop. And he's continued on. He's forged his own way through some of that crap hip hop that's around nowadays. There's nothing like the 90s, I don't reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So, mate, it sounds kind of like Queensland might be the centre of the Australian universe right now. I mean, you're pretty much getting all the AFL. You're keeping the virus out for the most part. I'm really hoping that you'll be accepting Tasmanians soon, because just last week the wife, you booked a family trip to Noosa, direct flight. So do you reckon there's still a chance for me?
I think there is, man, yeah. I think from Tasmania, yeah. I guess direct flight, yeah.
So straight through to Brizzy, yep.
Yeah, I'd say you might have a shot, yeah.
I'm bloody hoping so.
Yeah, looking forward to it all ending and, yeah.
Getting back to normal, yeah. So, mate, my last question for you, I'll let you off the hook because we've been going for about 40 minutes now and I told you it'd only be half an hour, but I just wondering, like, you've been through a lot since you started this journey. You moved to Australia, you quit your job, you started home brewing again, you struck up a brewery with a couple of Canadians and a few other blokes, and then you went through the whole process of trying to get the thing. You had to find a venue, took you 2 years, you had your appeal process, you got going, you know, probably 18 months into the whole thing and frigging COVID hits you. It has been a pretty turbulent experience for you, but I just want to know, taking all of that into account, would you still do it all again?
100%, man. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, wouldn't change anything about it. And looking forward to see where it goes. And man, like I said, I like to learn things the hard way anyways. So yeah. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
So as we wrap this thing up, what's the next big thing on the horizon for Sea Legs?
Well, I'd say there's a bit of expansion. We'll expand within our space and kind of see where it goes. And we'll see how it goes.
Well, mate, I've only tried two of your beers. I've got a couple more of those samples to work through that you sent me down. So thank you initially for sending me those down. That was very nice of you.
Absolutely.
And from what I've tasted so far, I'm impressed. These beers have been delicious. Would love to taste the golden hour maybe when I'm up there in October when it comes out as a mid-strength because, mate, I reckon you could be onto a winner with that.
Yeah, nice, so, man. Let us know how you're traveling.
Sounds good, mate. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I know I've taken you away from your family, but I appreciate it. And the beer nerds of Australia also appreciate it because I reckon they're going to get a real kick out of listening to your experiences of what you went through to actually get this brewery up and running. And it's great that you persevered, you and your business mates. And, best of luck to you in the future, mate. It's great stuff.
Awesome, man. Really appreciate the support. And, cheers.
Go Steelers.
Broncos.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.